Good afternoon, Lisbeth.
Good afternoon, Jason.
How are you today?
I am great. Filled with turkey and pumpkin pie. Super happy.
Yeah. Well, I think probably don't need to say when we're recording this, but we're recording this the Monday after Thanksgiving. So yes. I was just upstairs. My wife is making a shepherd's pie with our leftovers, which I'm very excited about. We had had some good leftovers. Did you end up with a lot of leftovers for your celebration?
Oh, no, we made exactly the perfect amount and pretty much ate it all that same night. So no leftovers.
That is very efficient. I don't think I've ever done that in Thanksgiving. But anyway, we could talk about Thanksgiving forever. It's a strange Thanksgiving, as I'm sure we'll get into more here on the show today. But before we get any further, I would love if you would introduce yourself to the audience. So, Lisbeth, who are you? Where are you in the world? And what are you up to?
Yes. So, hello, everybody. My name is Lisbeth Cardozo. I'm a co-founder and producer at a small 3D animation and creative content studio called Tiny Milkshake Media out of Hoboken, New Jersey. We're a husband and wife team, but we live in Weehawken, New Jersey. So just on the other side of you, I believe.
Yeah. Yep. Just on the other side of that Hudson River. I'm just going to ask you now, Tiny Milkshake Media. I'd love to hear the genesis of that name. I think it's such a cool and creative name, and it elicits such a positive feeling for me. I'd love to hear a little bit about how you came up with the name, or you and your husband came up with it.
So it was definitely me. I'm more of the brand strategist, all about, I used to be a creative copywriter back in the day, when I worked at advertising agencies in Miami, New York. When I first launched my agency, before it was a 3D animation and creative content studio, it was a digital marketing, studio, digital marketing company. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that really stood out in my mind is that I absolutely needed to have a purpose. I needed to have some sort of like an ethos, like a personality, a brand personality. And the one thing that was clear to me is that I wanted to make sure that everything that we do and everything we create, we make the world and the people in it a little happier with our services and with our content. And I just started trying to figure out, okay, what makes me happy? What makes most people happy, or some people happy? And, I started to think, I'm all about the food. I'm very much a foodie. Yeah. And, food makes me very happy. Very good food makes me happy. And one of my favorite treats, is our milkshakes and ice cream. I'm like, I'm so down for ice cream and milkshakes. And I decided to name Tiny Milkshake Tiny Milkshake because when I was younger in my childhood, my father would take my twin sister and I for milkshakes and burgers, and it was just a really happy, simple time. And so I just kind of wanted to embody that and create that for others through Tiny Milkshake Media.
I love it. That's so creative. It also, it reminds me of two of my favorite movies. I don't know if this is going to be a surprise to you, but there's two movies that immediately come to mind when I think of milkshakes. Do you know either one?
Gosh, you know, I don't think so.
The first one is Pulp Fiction.
Oh, I totally forgot that.
Yeah, yes! It's such a great scene.
Sharing milkshake. Yes. You see how happy they were? I mean,
But if you remember, the whole premise of the scene was that John Travolta's character was pissed that it was $5. And he said, for $5, it better be a really effing good milkshake. But then he tried it and he's like, this is a really effing good milkshake. It was such a classic scene.
Oh, that's
so funny.
Right.
Yeah. And then the other movie, I don't know if you've seen it, is There Will Be Blood with Daniel Day-Lewis.
No, I haven't seen that one.
Yeah. At the end, there's a super famous line. He doesn't drink a milkshake, but he talks about milkshakes at the end of the movie. It's very warped. But it's very good.
Oh, you see, it just even the movies, even Hollywood is talking about milkshakes.
Everybody loves milkshakes. All right.
Even if you're lactose intolerant, you know?
Exactly. All right. Let's get into it, Lisbeth. So first question I have for you is, what is something that you nerd out about besides milkshakes?
Definitely mindfulness, meditation. In fact, just this morning, every day for 30 minutes in the morning, I meditate. And then for 30 minutes at night, I meditate. And,
wow.
Yeah. So I consistently do it every single day, and throughout the day I'm listening to binaural beats. And I don't know if you know what binaural beats are.
I don't. I'd love to hear about it.
So let me see if I can. It's basically it's a therapy that is an emerging form of like sound wave therapy. It makes use of the fact that, you know, the right and left ear each receive a slightly different frequency tone.
Yeah.
But the brain perceives it as a single tone, and it's just really good. It's recommended for treatment of anxiety and stress or any type of disorders like that. Mm-hmm. I used to have a lot of anxiety years ago. I had a lot of anxiety, and I've been listening to binaural beats and meditating ever since. And it's just become a habit. So now I listen to it as background music, I guess. You know, some people will listen to Prince, some people will listen to Jay-Z. I listen to binaural beats while I'm working. Yeah.
Interesting. Is it, I've never heard of it, but I'll definitely check it out, and I'll add it to the show notes, 'cause I'm sure people will be interested in learning more about this. Like I am. Is it something that you can get from Pandora or Spotify? Is it like, is it a YouTube videos? Like where do you actually get the sounds?
Yeah. So I'm sure that you can find it on Spotify. I'm not sure if you can find it on Pandora, but you definitely can find it on YouTube. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All the binaural beats and the tones and the frequencies, I get it from YouTube.
Gotcha.
But what's really important to know is that these tones are typically frequencies lower than like 1,000 hertz for the brain to detect the binaural beat.
Mm, okay. Gotcha. So it's not something that you're actually aware you're listening to? At an auditory level?
No, you can actually hear it. No, you can actually hear it, but it just, it's definitely a different sound, a different pitch than anything you've really heard before.
Okay.
Sometimes you can't detect it. It just depends on which binaural beats you're listening to.
Gotcha. I want to go back to the meditation for a minute. So I started meditating about a year and a half ago, and I use something called Muse. It's a headband.
Oh yeah.
And I try to do 20 minutes a day, but that's about my limit. I'm just not that, it's not that you're good or bad at it, but I'm curious, when you meditate, do you, like, what do you do for meditation? Is it something where you just sit? Do you have something you listen to? Do you listen to guided meditations? Like what's your process?
So in the morning, right before I get out of bed, I'm laying down right before I get out of bed. The first thing I focus on, is I kind of like do a gratitude circle, and mm-hmm. I focus on what I'm grateful for. And I just kind of count, or in my mind, I go over the 10 things that I'm super grateful for. And I really feel that gratefulness and the gratitude. And it's an amazing, because once you do that, even if you were to wake up with anxiety, or if you were to wake up with, my God, I have like a million things I have to take care of, there's this important call I have to take care of, when you do that, it kind of forces you to slow down and focus on that, just the things that you're grateful for. And then basically there is no space for anything else. Now how I do it. I mean, I have to say it takes a lot of practice. There's no good or bad at meditating, but if I was to say I was bad at something, yeah, I was bad at meditating in the very beginning, 'cause I have such a monkey mind. My mind is constantly in a million directions all over the place. But yeah, meditation and doing it consistently has helped me to calm that monkey in my head, my monkey in my brain. And just, and it's just, I tell myself that this is just, a small amount of my time, that nothing else matters, that the list can wait, that the call, you know, the calls and everything I have to take care of can wait. And that this is something I'm doing for myself. Mm-hmm. for my mental health, especially now. I mean, for all of us going through COVID and just dealing with what we have to deal with COVID and the pandemic, I just think it's more than anything, it's just really important to focus on your self-care and your mental health.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, an hour a day. I'm just trying to think if that's something I could pull together. I think I could do if I willed myself to it, but that would be a stress for me. So I'll have to follow up with you and figure out how you actually got there, because I have a monkey mind as well. I've never heard that term, but I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a commitment. it took me a while to get there, but now it's like, now I have to do it. If I don't do it, I don't feel quite right in my body, sure, or my head. And now my body needs it. So
yeah,
I love it. I just call
That's cool. All day. That's cool. So the next question I have for you is around comfort zone. I'm curious at what's something that is inside of your comfort zone that might be outside of somebody else's. And I'm going to caveat this one because it's in your comfort zone to sit quietly and meditate for an hour a day, which is, I would say, is outside of the comfort zone of most other people that I know. There are obviously a lot of people do meditation, but what's something else besides meditation that is inside of your comfort zone that might be outside of somebody else's?
Yeah, definitely getting on camera and just being super charismatic and fun on camera. I love being in front of camera. Love being in front of the camera. And I don't do it enough. I need to do it more often. Yeah.
Is that something that you've always enjoyed, or did you have to work at it?
No, I had to work at it. So I went back in college, I studied journalism and marketing communications. Mm-hmm. And I loved both study tracks so much that I couldn't decide which one. So I just decided to major in both. And when I first, the university where I was going, they had a news center, a TV center and a radio station. So I was okay being on the radio station because nobody could see me. But I really wanted to try to see if I was okay on TV and what would that feel like. And at first I felt like an idiot, like everybody was judging me, that, you know, I must look so weird and crazy. How is my makeup? And, you know, I felt super uncomfortable with it, but then I just kept on doing it over and over and over again. And the more I did it and the more internships I had at TV stations and the more I was covering, small stories, in a little market in Arkansas, little tiny market, Fayetteville, Arkansas, the more I was on TV, the more I got to like it and I got used to it. And so now it's like super easy for me to be on camera.
Yeah.
But it also could be because, you know, I grew up performing on stage, which was incredibly frightening. But my twin sister and I used to dance, and we danced from the time we were 3 or 4 until we were like 18. And, you know, in the beginning it's scary, but then afterwards it's just, you're just performing. You're just in the art, just in it. So,
yeah. Yeah, that's a good one. That's the first time I've had a guest say something about, I've had a lot of guests talk about performing in front of people or, you know, like speaking, but it's the first time I've had anybody specifically call it camera work, which I find interesting because it's not unlike, and all people listening, if you identify with this, but even having a podcast and hearing yourself, it's jarring. So I'm not somebody, like I do videos and I've been on videos, but I don't have any cadence around doing videos, but to me, it would seem very jarring to like look at yourself. And I don't know what you think about this, but this is just popping in my mind. How long do you think it takes like an A-list celebrity, like an actor or an actress for like a big screen actor, actress to watch their own movie at a movie theater and not be uncomfortable with it? Cause I think that would be so strange to watch yourself on a huge screen.
Well, I mean, I don't know any A-list actors or actresses, but
damn it. Somebody up right now, we could ask them.
but I've read their interviews, and what I've heard or the general understanding is that they never feel comfortable looking at themselves. It's always really strange to look at themselves perform.
Yeah. Especially when it's like a movie that's like no special effects where you're just acting.
Yeah.
It must be so weird, especially if you're like a period piece or maybe you're not wearing makeup. Some of the roles that people take where they're not as glamorous as they look on the red carpet. It must be so strange.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. And to know that like these millions and millions of people are seeing you on a big screen, and then millions and millions and millions more are going to see you on their small screen at home. It just must be so trippy. I don't think I could ever get used to that.
Yeah. And I don't think it's so much that they care so much about millions of people watching them. I think it's just that, like most humans, we tend to be overly critical of our work or anything that we do. And so we are our own worst critics. So I think it's just most actors, unless they're incredibly confident and arrogant, like Tom Cruise, are basically just picking apart their entire scene and saying, oh, I could have done that better. Oh, I could have said that better. Oh, I could have delivered that line better. Yeah.
The death spiral. Yeah. That's so, Now let's take a look at something that's the opposite, which we know what's inside your comfort zone. What about something that's outside of your comfort zone that's likely inside of somebody else's?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure all of your guests have said the same thing, but definitely what's out of my comfort zone is public speaking and big crowds.
Like, yep.
I find that incredibly mortifying.
Yeah.
I've had to work myself up to public speaking, and it's so crazy because I'm great on camera. I am great when I'm one-on-one with somebody, meeting them for the first time. I am a master networker when I can work a room and meet anybody from, from the just starting out account executive to the CEO and VP, and just am able to talk to them at their levels. But yeah. When it comes to public speaking, and especially when I start thinking about, man, you know, one of my dreams is doing a TED talk and talking about something that could be really important that could help change or impact people's lives. Mm-hmm. But the minute I start thinking about it, I mean, my knees start trembling. I freak out. I psych myself out, but I know it's just in my mind. It's a mindset. It's the same thing I basically need to do the same exercise that I did with talking on camera. I need to do the same thing with public speaking. Which I started to do. I started to do it, you know.
Nice. I mean, there's a lot of options even during COVID. There's things like Toastmasters, or most networking groups have I know it's not the same as getting up on a stage, but yeah. I'm with you. It's so interesting that you're comfortable on a camera.
Yeah.
Not comfortable public speaking. I'm just thinking out loud what the,
like,
there's,
you know,
so there's something about the real time, something about being there in real time in the room with people.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yep. You got it. Yeah.
So it's the energy. Camera, yeah.
Yeah. Well, no, it's not just that. When I'm on camera, nobody's watching me. I'm being recorded, right? Unless you're watching me live, I'm being recorded. Nobody's watching me. Nobody's has the opportunity to judge me. Right. So when I'm talking in front of people, I can visibly see if people are, you know, liking what I'm talking about or not liking it. And I can see they're visibly judging me. And I know that's all, you know, I shouldn't care so much about that. I should just care about the message and what impact I can make on the audience. But yeah, that still gets to me. I don't like to be judged. Yeah. I need to get over that already.
Shocking. Shocking that as a human being, you don't like to be judged. Speaking of TED Talks, before we move on, there's a really great TED Talk that Joseph Gordon-Levitt did. Did you see it?
Oh, I've heard of it. I don't think so. But what
you should check it out. Check it out. It's really good. It's about, it's about performing and the need to be liked and the need and like kind of what we're talking about. It's, I mean, I think he's a great actor anyway. Like I really like him and I think he's got a really good, like he's very down to earth. It's a great TED talk too. So you should definitely check it out. It's funny. It's serious. You know, it's got all the markings of a Hallmark TED talk. So definitely check that out for people listening. Check that out too. It's Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I think he did it in 2018. What's interesting is somebody who likes to be on the camera, I think you'll take a lot from it. So this is actually the perfect segue to the next question I have for you, Elizabeth. I gave you 5 minutes to deliver a speech to the entire world. And yes, the speech is in real time. So you're being recorded, but you're also doing it in real time on a telecast. So people will be judging you. Let's just be honest.
Damn.
What? Okay. And you mentioned this before that you've got something important to share. Like, I'm not curious if this is where you want to put it in, but what would you give your speech on? And why?
Okay. So like I said before, if I was to do a TED talk, I would say something that would have a great impact on people or could help people. So what I most likely would talk about is how I reversed cancer in my body. So I would basically just, I could definitely talk 5 minutes about how I did it and how I got there and how I got out of it. How I was able to reverse cancer in my body. So that's what I would talk about.
Mm. Are you going to go into that any further later on the episode?
Yeah, I can. Sure. Okay.
Well, I was just thinking, should I ask you about it now? Because I'm sure the audience would be fascinated. I'm fascinated. And usually if I'm fascinated, I think most of the audience would be fascinated. I'll actually ask you in a little bit, if that's okay with you. You can bring it up. So this is actually a good time. We're going to take a quick commercial break and we'll be right back after this.
The Talking to Cool People podcast is brought to you by Jason Frizzell Coaching. Jason works with amazing people who are looking to find and develop their passion and purpose and create their journey to wherever it is they want to go. Check us out at jasonfrizzell.com, Facebook, or on Instagram. Jason loves hearing from anyone who thinks it would be cool to connect, to be coached, or to be a guest on our show. Email him at podcast@jasonfrizzell.com or DM him on Facebook and Instagram. And now, back to some more amazing conversation on Talking to Cool People.
Hey, and we are back. Lisbeth, how are you so far?
I'm great, Jason. Thanks.
All right. So, love being on the camera. Don't like public speaking. Working on it.
Yeah.
That's a fascinating juxtaposition. You had me thinking about that. I'm trying to think about what I'm more or less comfortable with. And I think I'm actually more comfortable with public speaking than I am with being on camera.
Wow. Well,
so maybe we can team up. Yeah, I don't know. But I'm also not somebody who's been on camera much. And by the way, I was a journalism major as well. But I never did anything with it in terms, I mean, I sold advertising, but I never worked on either the account side or the creative side of advertising. I got out of school and I went right into sales and I was selling something that had nothing to do with advertising, but I did enjoy the journalistic part of it, like the investigative part. And I do believe I did take a broadcast journalism course, which I found fun and interesting. Mm-hmm. And looking back at what I like to do now, I think I would love to be on the news. A hard-hitting investigative reporter would be like work for the Times and do like either business reporting or some sort of, I like stories that take a long time. Mm-hmm. So if you go out and invest, like the movie, do you ever see the movie Spotlight?
Yes. Yes.
So like mm-hmm. I think that was a 1 or 2 year story where you're working on like this, it's kind of like a detective story that you're putting together for 1 or 2 years. And then you come out with this like massive expose or a massive story. I think that would be what I'd like to do. And like relating that to television, to being on camera with something around like a Dateline or a 2020 type situation. But I like that stuff. I just never did anything with it.
Wow, Jason. Well, you're kind of doing it right now in a way.
Kind of. We're investigating Lisbeth today, so that's good. We're going to ask you the tough questions coming up.
Okay, let's do it.
you sound excited about it. All right. So this is the part of the show where you just get a chance to share with us what got you here to near the end. Can you believe it? It's almost the end of 2020. Strangest mm-hmm. year ever, at least. Mm-hmm. For me. And, you know, like what led you to where we are today, what you're up to now? This is just, in other words, a chance for you to share anything you'd like to share with the audience with no holds barred. I'm taking the guardrails off and you do you. And I will likely ask you some questions as we go through this.
Okay. So as far as like my business or just me personally?
Whatever you'd like to share.
Okay. So, I mean, Tiny Milkshake Media, we're, like I said, we're a 3D animation and creative content studio. We launched 3 years ago. And this is our third year. By April, it was exactly 3 years. In the first quarter of this year, we were tracking to make about 80 to 100,000 in revenue, which is crazy for us because we're a small team of 4 people.
Yeah.
In late March or late March, all of the seeds that I had planted and cultivated over the past 6 or 9 months, basically just all the projects fell apart because of COVID-19. And, yep. Of course I panicked and, it was incredibly devastating and kind of a blow to all the work that I had done and kind of a blow to my ego. And I knew that mm-hmm. I had nothing to do with it, but I panicked for a bit and then I took a step back and decided, you know, I'm going to take this as an opportunity and see how I can look at our strategies and see, you know, our business strategy, our business model, our marketing strategies and see what's working and what isn't. And I also took it as an opportunity, even though we couldn't make masks, we couldn't make PPE. We took it as an opportunity to see what could we do as a small business to help others and to help other small businesses that have been affected by the pandemic? So we decided to launch a animated logo giveaway for small businesses impacted by the pandemic and ask them to submit videos telling us, you know, how they were affected by the pandemic and how they've pivoted or how they're doing now. And we basically, it turned into this really big thing, and it ended up being while we were helping people, which was wonderful, but it ended up being another opportunity and opened doors for other opportunities for us to take on other jobs.
That's awesome.
So it kind of like just one of the things I guess might as well just talk about the pandemic and COVID-19, but I know a lot of people have been suffering from, you know, mental health and just separation and feeling very isolated, but I don't know. I've had some sort of mind shift through this entire time. And I am finding that I am more productive, more calm than I've ever been. And, you know, feeling like I have more purpose and just in a much better place than I was even like 3 years ago when we first launched this, our studio. Mm-hmm. And finding that I'm able to, even though I'm doing less, I'm finding that I'm being a lot more productive and it being a lot more efficient and having a lot more success than I ever had before. Mm-hmm. because the pandemic has forced me to slow down, you know, and just focus on the things that really matter.
Yeah. So, are you enjoying yourself more?
Yeah, I have to say I am. Every single weekend, my husband and I, we love the outdoors, and every single weekend, we either go hiking or we go biking. We always find it, you know, a new trail to explore, a new park to see, you know, out in New Jersey or upstate New York. And now it's like a thing. Like that's the thing that we look forward to on weekends. And on weekdays, I always make it a point to wake up early in the morning and, you know, work out for an hour and a half, or go, you know, do Pilates for like 30 minutes and then walk or jog for an hour. Like, and even though I'm spending that time, I still find time to come back home and, you know, take a shower and be ready for meetings and be on point. And I also have never slept so well in such a long time. Like I am sleeping really well. I don't know what that is. Like, I feel like I should be really, like my anxiety should be sky high, but it's not. It's like, I have never been more calm and feel more in control and more, you know, like I'm more productive than I've ever been before.
That's amazing.
Maybe it's because I'm not commuting anymore. I wonder.
That's probably part of it. dealing with were you commuting into the city prior, into New York City?
So our office was in Hoboken. So I would commute to Hoboken, but, but a lot of our clients were in New York City. So I would also commute to the city for pitches.
Yeah.
So pretty much like 2 to 3 times a week I was in New York City. So yeah, I would commute, and it's not that far. It only takes us 20 to 25 minutes to get into the city, through the tunnel. And then typically, it would take me 10 minutes on the bus to get to Hoboken, to my office in Hoboken, or on the days that I had time, I would walk 35 minutes to the office.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess that's kind of helping. And that's why I'm finding more time, because I don't have to commute anymore.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you got big foundations there between the meditation and the physical exercise. That's a great way to like take care of two of the major things that a lot of people struggle with. Like your anxiety / relaxation, and then making sure that your body's ready to go. Like that's a huge thing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a huge commitment, but I realize that, you know, I'm worth it. And if I want my mental state and I want my mental health to be good and my physical health to be good, but I know that I need to commit and I need to do this for myself. And it's a form of self-care. Like it's a way of showing, you know, self-love, loving myself.
Do you find the quality of your work to be better?
The quality of my work? I think it's always been really good. I think my quality of my work is, what I can say is that I'm not as tired as I used to be. And I'm like wide awake, productive. Even if I have to, sometimes I try not to, but sometimes I work well past 7 or 9 or 11 and I'm still wide awake, super productive. Like I am so charged, like I'm not exhausted. And, But then when it's time for me to turn off, you know, I turn everything off. I make sure I don't look at blue light for an hour or two before I go to bed.
Yeah.
I try to get to bed between 10 and 10 PM and 12 AM. And then once I'm in bed, that's it. No cell phones, no TVs. And as soon as my head hits the pillow, within 5 minutes, I'm asleep and I have really good sleep, which is great.
That's
which
awesome.
I had before. I didn't have that
yeah.
before. Now I do.
Yeah. That's awesome. I want to go back to the 3D animated logos that piqued my interest. Mm-hmm. What is this something that lives on your clients' websites? Like, what was the giveaway? What were you specifically giving away, and where would it be used? Where could we see it?
Yeah. So it was 2D animated and 3D animated logos. Mm-hmm. We are more 3D animators than 2D animators, but mm-hmm. 2D animation is less expensive and less complicated to create than 3D. Mm-hmm. So we were doing a lot more 2D than 3D for the giveaway. But it's basically, it can be used anywhere in the digital realm. So a lot of the people that we are working with and the clients that we're working with, they use it to put it on their website. They use it as a signature at the bottom of their email signature. They use it to implement, they integrate it into a video. So that, like, they use it for a video introduction or a video outro.
Cool.
They use it. They might use it on their LinkedIn. They post it on their LinkedIn. Anywhere where there's like marketing, brand marketing touch points, that's where they use it. But yeah,
interesting.
You can use it in almost anyway.
That's cool. I'm trying to think if I've ever seen an email signature that had what's the file type that it comes in?
There are several file types, and I forget exactly what they are, but I believe one of them was an MP4. Actually, I can look it up right now.
Cool. MP4 makes sense. Yeah, I was curious. Like that, yeah, it's a universal standard. You can throw that anywhere.
Yeah, but it's not just MP4. There are many other file types. I just forget what they all are. But there are four different file types, based on, because you know, one file type will work for an email signature, another file type. You have to have a specific file type for a website. You have to have another file type to be able to place inside a video, integrate inside a video.
Okay. Makes sense. Gotcha. No, that's cool. I'm trying to recall if I've seen that before. It's super cool. I had another question for you about your business.
Yeah.
So you said you and your husband worked together. So you started the company as a couple.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm not trying to lead the witness here, but I'm just curious how is that? Because I understand that is not something that I think my wife and I would ever do together.
I think you mentioned this before.
I think I may have. I'm curious how people do it all the time, right? Like how do you, when there's like a business discussion to be had, and it's also with your spouse, how do you handle that? Like, how does that go? Like, do you have any, did you like, when you laid out the business, did you lay out any kind of ground rules, or is there any, like, how do you keep that separation when there's, or like feedback on work when you know that it might on a personal level be a little hurtful, like, and maybe all the work is amazing all the time. I know my work isn't amazing all the time, but like, how does that work for you and your husband?
Yeah. So I have to admit, in the beginning, it was a little bit tough. Just like mm-hmm. like any relationship, when you transition a relationship, like from girlfriend to boyfriend to husband and wife, I mean, it's always a little bit of a transition and trying to figure out how you'll work together. But when we first started working together, I made the mistake of not laying down the groundwork and not laying down what the expectations were. We just kind of like, I was like, okay, you know, you're the creative director, and anything that is not creative that has to do with business development or sales or social media marketing or production, that's my thing. But quickly we realized, you know, we had a couple arguments in the beginning, but quickly we realized that we had to be really clear of what our expectations were, our expectations of our business and expectations of each other. And ever since we cleared that up, it's been super easy for us to work together. It's actually been a lot of fun for us to work together, and how we maneuver conversations around business. It's the weirdest thing. I don't know how we do it, but it's just like when it's just my husband and I, and we're having dinner or I'm cooking dinner, or we're talking about our relationship or just our goals together when it comes to our own personal lives. It's like we're in this different space, the space of just husband and wife. And then all of a sudden when we have like a client call, like we had two client calls or potential partner calls this morning. And I don't know, it just somehow the energy around us kind of changes, that it's almost like he's no longer my husband. I mean, yes, he's my husband, but now it's like he's my partner. He's my co-founder. Something changes in the dynamic we work so well together, like, you know, tag teaming each other. And when there's a question that the potential content partner asks me and I can't quite answer it, he immediately answers it. And then when there's something that he can answer, I immediately answer. We just kind of like, it's like this beautiful dance. I don't know.
That's cool.
It just works really well now because we finally clarified and set the expectations.
You know? Yeah. No, I was so curious about that. I mean, I was assuming if you've been in business for as long as you have that it's working. I was just curious how that goes when you start, but yeah, it sounds like any relationship, you get to a place you're like, hey, like there's some things that need to be changed and addressed, and both on the same page. So congratulations. That's super cool. Do you envision, is this what you two want to do the rest of your careers? Run the company?
Probably not the rest of our lives. I mean, we have a while to go before we kick the bucket, we love what we're doing right now. We're helping agencies and brands and small businesses build their audiences, grow their audiences and build their brand through tiny animated content and tiny animated stories. And we love what we're doing. We would love to grow our studio bigger and get bigger and better clients and just really bigger and better opportunities. But I'm seeing, you know, there are all these other things that I would love to do. I'm wondering if running our studio, we'll be able to like travel around the world and be nomadic. Like one of the things I really want to do with my husband and my mom is walk the Santiago de Compostela. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but it's El Camino, the way. It's this 3,000-mile walk through France and through Spain until you end at the very end, where it's basically a spiritual journey, and it's where pilgrims go there to walk until they get to the very end, where apparently piece of the robe or sandals or something like that of Jesus and some saint are buried there, something like that.
That sounds pretty phenomenal.
Yeah. So those are like things I want to do. And I think we can do that with our studio because all we really need is, we're all digital. We're all online. We've been working remotely since March.
Yeah.
But there are so many other things I want to do. Like I would love to do that journey and then do a YouTube channel around that journey. But then I'm super into like health and wellness and holistic health. And right now I am experimenting with anti-inflammatory diet. About a month ago, it was keto. Just a couple weeks ago, it was paleo. And now I'm into the anti-inflammatory diet. So I was thinking maybe there are other people like me who might be interested in that.
Because
I'm just always very interested in seeing how my body reacts to certain foods or eliminating or adding certain foods and see what happens with my body while also working out. So I'm kind of wondering if like that's something I could do as a side business or a side hustle and, you know, start a YouTube channel as well on Instagram and see if that's something that might be of interest to other women, you know?
I'm sure it would be. I mean, Tim Ferriss, I don't know if you're a Tim Ferriss fan.
Yeah. Love him.
Diet. Yeah. Like body hacking. Let's try a bunch of stuff and see how my body reacts to it. I think he took it a little bit too far a few times where he's like, oh wait, the doctors tell me this is not healthy.
Oh, that is too funny. I didn't realize that about him. I mean, I think I read that in one of his books that he does that, but I forgot.
Yeah.
Some kind of same way. But I do that with everything. Like if I get like a, like, for example, I mean, not to be gross or anything, but I'm just, might as well just share it with you, but I,
do it.
I, But I used these gloves, and I didn't realize there was water inside the latex gloves. And when you use gloves that latex gloves with water, and then sometimes you might get fungi from it. Ooh. So I've had this fungi in the middle of my fingers, like the web, for like about 2 or 3 months now. And I've been, it's just very itchy and just itchy and just a nuisance. But I started using, I've been trying or attempting to use different holistic remedies. So one of the things I started trying was tea tree oil. Before that, I was using something else. I think it was papaya ointment, but that wasn't working. And then I started using tea tree oil. And rather than going to the doctor and getting antibiotics or getting an antibacterial or getting, ointments or steroids or anything that kind of will mess with my body and my gut flora, I decided to just use tea tree oil. And I've been doing it for about 3 or 4 days and it's like practically gone. So yeah, I'm all about hacking and figuring out what in our world, what plants I can use to just make my body work better and heal my body in a very holistic, natural way.
Yeah, that's so, cool. Yeah,
that's one of the things I'm very interested in.
I love that. Yeah. I love that. All right, we're going to transition and you're going to play podcast host for a little bit.
Oh, cool. Okay.
You're going to ask me something. So, Lisbeth, what would you like to ask me that I can answer for you and for the audience?
Sure. So, why did you start this podcast and how did you start it?
Yeah, this is probably, I'm trying to think about this. This is probably the third or fourth most popular question. I love answering this question, so thank you. And this is not pre-planned, obviously. I had no idea what she was going to ask me. So when I was little, and by little, I'd say probably from the time I was about 12 or so, I wanted to be Johnny Carson. And then on The Tonight Show, for those listening who are a little bit younger, Johnny Carson was the host of The Tonight Show before Jay Leno, which I believe Jay Leno took over full time. I want to say like 90 or 91, but maybe it's a little bit later. And then it's obviously Jimmy Fallon took over for Jay Leno, I think, what, 5 or 6 years ago now. But I always wanted, the thing that I liked was he was really entertaining, but he always just got to have fun conversations with people. And I didn't realize at the time that those shows are actually, they're not scripted, but it's like their agents hand you a list of questions that you ask them about. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that at the time. I'm like, oh, they just like go on and they just have fun conversation. Like, well, no, actually their press agent or they hand him like, hey, Johnny, ask Jason about his new movie coming out and ask him about like his trip. And it's not like rehearsed per se, but it kind of is. But, it's like a little bit off the cuff. I just think it depends on the guest. And so that's obviously not something I ever did. Never had a talk show. Never was on the radio. And about a year and a half ago, I was on a podcast for the first time. And I had a blast as a guest. And I remember just thinking to myself, like, why don't I just start a podcast out of nowhere? I'm like, okay, let's just start a podcast because I'm fairly technical. So I'm like, the technical part is easy. I can figure that out. But what am I going to do? I have no idea what I'm going to do. Hmm. I'm like, well, what do you like doing? I'm like, I love people. So I'm going to talk to interesting people. And so I put together a list of like, must have been 50 people that I knew would probably say yes to be in my podcast. I just shot out an email and said, hey, I'm going to start this thing. I don't know what it's called yet, but I'm going to interview people and here's the sort of stuff I'm going to ask. Would you like to be on? I got all yeses.
No way.
And, amazing. Yeah. I mean, well, the funny thing is a friend of mine who was on my show, he also has his own podcast where he interviews people and he's like, who doesn't like to come onto a place and talk about themselves? Like everybody, almost everybody says yes to that. Especially if it's fun. You know, you don't need to be an expert. You're just like sharing who you are with the world.
Yeah.
And you don't have to like, you don't really, I mean, for this show, for me personally, I try to have the style is we don't have to be on. We just have to have we're just having a conversation. Right. You don't have to be rehearsed. You don't have to, you know, like be an expert or like, if you want to share your wisdom, yes, which you are, but I'm not having you come out and be like, share like some crazy expertise. And we're like, hey, let's get to know my guest. So I did that. And it was my fifth guest that I interviewed. And this is, I recorded like 10 episodes before I released the first one. Because I wanted to get some practice and see how it was going. And I remember her name is Krista Rizzo. She's phenomenal. I think she's episode 5 or 6. And she's really creative. She's just a firecracker of a woman. She's awesome. And I'm like, you know, I don't have a name for this podcast. And she's like, oh, it's easy. Just like call it like Talking to Cool People. I'm like, oh. Okay. And I was like, oh yeah, okay. So she named it because I had nothing. I had like episodes recorded with no concept of the artwork or of the title of the show. So I'm like, all right, that works for me. Sounds good. That's kind of what I'm doing. So I went out, had a designer do the artwork and launched the show. And I launched it in January. Did you give you a little bit more backstory? My initial goal was to do 100 episodes this year, which looking back, it's aggressive. It's a very aggressive schedule to record because each episode takes about an hour to an hour and a half to record. Then you have some editing, then you have some artwork, some marketing. Like it's a lot as you know, advertising. Mm-hmm. And I actually did that through January through, I think it was April. I did 2 episodes a week and it was really fun. And I was getting like a lot of listenership and then COVID hit and dropped off to about half. And I'm like, what's going on? I'm like, oh, people aren't commuting. Majority of podcasts, I believe, are listened to all commuting, whether it be on a public transportation or in a car. Mm-hmm. So my numbers dropped off. And I'm like, all right, let me just take a little break. So I took like a month break off and I came back and I'm like, I'm going to do this weekly. And I've been releasing almost every week other than when I took a little time off when the baby's born and holidays. I've been releasing every week since May and plan to do this. And I don't plan to just stop. Episode 50 comes out tomorrow morning, Tuesday at 6 a.m. Episode 50, which is puts this podcast in a pretty unique territory for, because most podcasts don't stay long-term just because people, it's a lot of work or whatever. And they either don't enjoy it or it gets to be too much work or they think they're going to make money and they don't, whatever the thing is. So I have episode 50 coming tomorrow. I have a whole slew of people that I'm still going to, that I've said yes to interviewing that I'm going to start kicking back up interviews again, including you're one of them. And plan to go into next year. I'm still debating whether I want to do weekly or biweekly next year though, because my business is taking off. So I want to, kind of what you were talking about earlier, the hustle of it. Mm-hmm. I don't want to feel the grind. And it's an interview show. And like at the end of the day, I'd rather have the space for myself, but also to have really good episodes versus feeling like every week I got to have something that's cool. And every episode I've done has been cool so far, but I'm still debating it. I'll probably do weekly until the end of this year, which will be another 4 episodes. And then we'll see you next year. But that is how the podcast came to fruition.
Wow. What a journey to where you are now.
Yeah, no, totally. It's so hard to believe it's been almost a year. It does not feel like it's been a year. I've talked to every one of my guests has just been such a fun, phenomenal conversation. It's a ton of fun. At the end of the day, I try not to do anything unless it's fun. And so I have a lot of fun with it, which hopefully comes out when people listen to this, which is why I still do it and I'll keep doing it until it's not fun. And then I'll either reinvent and do something different or I won't do it at all. And that'll be the call I'll make when the time is right. But right now I'm having a blast doing it.
I 100% believe in that philosophy. I've always believed in that philosophy. I've just never really, didn't really know how to vocalize it until I read the Tony Hsieh's book, from Zappos.
Yes.
The late Tony, who unfortunately just, tragically.
Yeah. Horrible.
Away in a house fire. But, I believe it was In Pursuit of Happiness, from Profits to, I forgot what the name of the title, but In Pursuit of Happiness or Delivering Happiness in Pursuit of Profits.
Yeah.
And Happiness or something like that. But, I'm 100% down for, like, if you're not having fun, what is the point? There is no point unless you're having fun. So like that is our motto and our philosophy at Tiny Milkshake Media. Is one of the 10 values that I send out to any of my employees or anybody who works with us. One of the first 3 values is have fun. If you're not having fun, then you're
in the wrong. Totally. Yeah, I love that too. And that's actually a newer thing for me. That's not something I'm always somebody who likes to have a lot of fun. I think it's one of my core values, but I never knew how to really articulate it. And I'll admit it, we're going back to Tim Ferriss. I took something that Tim Ferriss said a few years ago and I actually made it my own. So he said, when he was writing his book, The Tools of Titans.
Oh yeah.
He ran into a, that book's a lot of work, right? He had, I think he interviewed over 100 people. We're talking, you know, Mark Cuban, Arnold Schwarzenegger, like a lot of people that are probably hard to get on the schedule. And it's just a lot of work. I don't write books, but I can imagine it's a lot of work to write a book like that. Mm-hmm. And he said that he wrote an article in Forbes about this a few years ago, that he was having a lot of anxiety and he was considering not doing it anymore. Mm. And then I don't know if he got to this through coaching or therapy or meditation or Tim Ferriss maybe doing some microdosing or all the stuff that he likes to do. But he said he came to this realization and asked himself the question, what would it look like if this was easy? Wow. And that changed his mindset of like, well, what would it be like if I just wrote this book and it was actually easy instead of feeling like a grind or hard? So for me, I try to ask that in my business and in my life a lot. Like, what would it look like if this was fun? Like, if I'm like, oh God, this podcast is such a grind. What would it look like if it was fun? So the answer for me would be, well, go find a new cool person to interview or recreate something or come up with a new question. Or in my coaching business, like, oh, it's, you know, like I'm looking for clients. Well, what would it be like if you just reach out to people that you already like and trust and talk to them about getting new clients? Like if they know anybody, like that would be a lot more fun for you. And like actually reinventing that way. And it's not perfect. There are a lot of things that we do that are not fun, but when you have a chance to, and it sounds like you've incorporated this in your business, like what could make this fun? Oh, we got an annoying client. Their deadline is unreasonable. Oh, well, how can we make this fun? I don't know. Let's put on some dance music. Let's take a dance break. I don't know, like anything, you know, like whatever it is for you and your employees. Maybe you do a virtual dance break right now.
Oh my God. Yeah. That is so fun. Yeah. That is definitely something I'd be down for. A virtual dance break.
I'll have to incorporate it on the show here at some point, although it's audio only. So all you hear is some feet moving around. That would be funny. That would be fun. All right. That's a great question. Thank you. I love sharing that. And it's a great question, Elizabeth. So let's take it back to you. And I'm curious, what is something that you're passionate about?
I am passionate about a lot of things. But one of the things that I'm super passionate about is encouraging and elevating women and women of color and women. I'm a part of this nonprofit organization, used to be called Advertising Women of New York, which was established in 1912 in New York City to help bring women, women get a seat at the table in advertising. But obviously women have the table now. So now what we're working on is helping women to get to the C-suite level in advertising and media and ad tech. Since I have such an interest in helping elevate women, I also at the beginning of the pandemic, I launched a virtual women in content Zoom meetup, a women in content virtual meetup. And I have it weekly now for women in content. It's basically a safe space for us to come together and support each other, elevate each other, talk about our problems and opportunities and collaborate with each other. Everything surrounding, you know, the pandemic and COVID-19. And I've been doing it since April now. So 9 or 10 months now, and it's been incredibly successful. And in the beginning of this year, right before the pandemic hit in January, I also launched organization to help women entrepreneurs, another organization or community where women come together to help and support each other around entrepreneurship, because entrepreneurship, especially for women, can be a very lonely journey. And it's just statistically known that women have less access to capital and opportunities than you know, white males do, their white counterparts do. So I also launched Elevate Her Community for women entrepreneurs. So as you can tell, I'm all about encouraging, super passionate about encouraging others, motivating others, lifting others, and just trying to help anybody who may not have the upper hand and may need a little push to be able to move forward and just live out their potential.
Very cool. So the communities you're referring to, if we have somebody who's listening, who's interested, which I'm sure we would, are these communities that are meet on Zoom, is a Slack, Facebook group? Like what's the actual format and how would people, and at the end of this, I'll ask you where people can find you. We'll put all this in the show notes, but I'm curious, like what's the what is the actual format of this? Some people are, I'm interested, so I'm assuming other people are interested as well.
Yeah. So the Advertising Woman of New York rebranded a couple of years ago and is now called She Runs It, because let's face it, she does run it. I mean, look, we have the first VP, vice president, female woman of color, vice president of the United States, yes. Kamala Harris. And like, let me tell you, hands down, she runs it. So, all you have to do is just go to sherunsit.org and you'll be able to find any information there on She Runs It. For women in media, ad tech, advertising, marketing, communications. The other one is you'll be able to just Google it, or go on to Eventbrite. The Women in Content virtual meetups are on Eventbrite and they're entirely free. So you could just, if you're a woman animator or writer, or if you are a woman in social media marketing or video, you can just join us on Thursdays or Fridays. We have it every Thursday and Friday.
And, oh, cool.
Yeah, and Elevate Her, which was the woman on the community of women entrepreneurs. Amazingly, at our first launch, we thought only 15 or 20 women would attend, but more than 50 women ended up attending. And we got Amazon to sponsor it. They sponsored the food, the drinks, the space, everything. It was amazing.
Nice.
But since then, the four other co-founders and I just kind of, we're all still friends, but when the pandemic hit, we all decided that we needed to focus on our own, businesses. So that kind of fell by the wayside. So it's still there, but it just kind of fell by the wayside and none of us are really doing anything with it right now. So the ones that gotcha. That are really active still are sherunsit.org or She Runs It and, Women in Content virtual meetup.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, I'll make sure to put both of those links in the show notes so people can click on those and check them out. All right. What is the thing that you are most proud of?
Oh gosh. Okay. I don't know. There's so many things I'm proud of.
I know there are so many things. I'm like, how is she going to answer this? You've shared so many things already. Okay. How are you going to answer this? But I'm going to make you pick one.
Okay. So, there's so many things, but okay. I'd have to say that, when I was 19, I had an opportunity to work at a local radio station and, work there and make money while I interned at a local TV station as a junior reporter. Mm-hmm. I mean, I basically went through many different channels to find those opportunities and drove practically cross country from Florida on my own with a map, because back then there was no Google Maps,
yeah.
Found my way finally in Fayetteville, Arkansas after many detours and getting lost a lot. While I was working at the radio station, the news director of the radio station, heard that I had worked at my local university radio station and wanted to listen to my newsreel, I guess it would be called a demo or newsreel. Mm-hmm. And he listened to it and he basically approached me a couple of days later and said, you know, Lizbeth, I would like you. He said, I have to have brain surgery because he had a tumor. Really crazy. Mm-hmm. Actually. It's like, I have to have brain surgery because I have a tumor. Would you like to take over the news for me? The news in the morning at 5 o'clock in the morning till 8 o'clock in the morning.
What? And, what? And you were 19?
I was 19. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Fayetteville, wow. Arkansas. Yeah. Fayetteville, Arkansas in this, it's a demographic market, DMI market, like 168, really small, but still he was like, yeah. He scared me. I mean, he didn't mean to scare me, but I guess he was trying to make it sound like it was a super important grandiose job. And he was like, yeah, you're going to be heard tri-state. People in Missouri, Oklahoma and Arkansas are going to be hearing you, more than 500,000 people. And that just scared the pants off of me.
Yeah.
As you know, the whole judgy thing, but, that I got going on, but I was thinking, okay, well, you know, I went home, I was, you know, called my parents, I was crying. I'm like, I don't know what to do. You know, I'm having like a fit because I didn't know what to do because I'm 19. And I'm like, I feel like I should do this, but I don't know if I'm going to mess it up. And I don't recall what they told me, but what I remember, what I told myself is the question I asked, and that I always ask myself this question is, if I don't do it, will I regret it?
Mm.
And the answer was, yes, absolutely. I'll regret it if I don't do it. There will always be a what if. So the next day I approached the news director and I said, yes, that I would do it. And that was, I guess, my proudest moment, that I pushed past the fear. And even though I screwed up so many times, but you know, Chip Arledge, the rotund one, the guy, I was doing the news in the morning and he was the personality, the morning personality. It was an opportunity for him to make fun of me, and we just made light of it. It was funny, you know?
There you go. You made it fun. There it is.
Fun. Exactly.
Wow. That sounds, as you're telling this, I'm thinking about, what was I doing at 19? I'm like, that sounds really nerve-wracking. I was certainly not on a news channel. That is amazing.
Yeah. I was peeing in my pants, but
I like how you held this back too. Like, I'm comfortable being on camera. And now you tell us, oh, when you were 19, you actually were on camera. Well, that would make a lot of sense.
Oh, it was actually on radio.
Radio. But you're like, no wonder that you're comfortable doing that stuff. That makes sense. Did you have to do like the, what do they call in New York? I don't listen to the radio, but like, what do they call, like, on the, was that on the nines? What do they call it? The nines and the, were they like the weather and the traffic on the.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Did you have to do all that?
Yeah, I would wake up at 2:30 in the morning. I would be there by
6:30.
I would look over all the wires, the AP, the UP, UPI, all the wires. I knew who our demographic was and what they would be interested in. So I would circle anything that would be, I would grab anything or circle anything that would be important to our demographic, which was mainly female. I think it was 35 to 45 or something like that.
Yeah.
5 to 54. And so, and then I would just, tell the news in the morning. And by 5 o'clock in the morning, I would start telling the news or relating the news, 5 to 8 in the morning. So I can't remember whether it was every 30 minutes or every hour, but.
I'm impressed that at 19, you were waking up at 2:30. Cause I think at 19, I was probably going to bed around 2:30.
Yeah, I know. Usually that was me going to bed at 2:30, but no, I was committed.
I can see that.
Yeah, I was going to help my news director friend, you know, and I wanted the opportunity. So
yeah, that's cool. That's a super inspiring and cool story. It's possible, like, but especially people like, oh, I'm too young. Go out and take your shot. That's what I would say.
Exactly. Yeah.
So I call this the vulnerability question, and I think you'll have something for us. And if not, I can give you some prompts. But it's a question for you, Elizabeth.
Mm-hmm.
What is something you're afraid might actually be true about you?
Well, people have told me that, well, I guess there are two things that I'm afraid that might be true. And I'm really working on it to reverse it, if it's true. But one thing that I've been told countless times, 10 years ago, no, that person is no longer in my life. So they don't tell me that anymore. Nobody tells me that anymore. But I was told many times that I was I was not a salesperson, that I was a bad closer.
Mm.
So, and I was like, yeah, but I'm an opener. I'm an amazing opener. I can open the doors to anywhere. But you know what? Just like anything, just like me, you know, learning to be on radio, learning to be on TV, learning now to be, you know, to do public speaking, anything can be learned if you just work at it. Mm-hmm. So I've been working on it. So I guess I'm hoping that I've gotten past that. And then the other thing that I'm also working on, that I've been told that I am, is that I'm a bad listener. I hope that's
you're like true. Specifically by my husband. But
exactly. I hope that's not true. So I really, and that I interrupt people, and I really don't want to do that. I think I just get so excited about the story, whoever's telling me a story, and I'm like, oh yeah, me too. And I realize I really should not do that. And I should just listen to my friend or my husband or my sister telling the story, or my mom. Just last time my mom told me to stop interrupting. Yeah.
That's funny. I'm going to give you a little bit of a cheat code here.
Okay.
There's an acronym. I learned this through my coach training program. It's WAIT. Why am I talking? And it's a way for you to like when you're coaching a client, or, you know, you're out doing a pitch or whatever it is, and like catching yourself, like, what's the reason that I'm actually about to open my mouth? Is it because I'm trying to persuade or convince? Is it because I'm trying to sound smart? Is it because I'm trying to entertain? Is it because I want to be liked, or something else? And like, there's obviously tons of valuable reasons why you don't, like, somebody asks you a question, or you're doing a pitch for your services, and like, they want you to come in as an expertise, but it's a way to catch yourself and be like, what is the premise of, what is the reason I'm actually going to talk an hour interrupting? It sounds to me like what comes off as interrupting, you're just a friendly person who likes to build consensus through common interest or common bonds, which right. is totally, to me, that's a very normal human thing to do. And it sounds like you just get excited that you have something in common with that person and want to, like, it's a shared experience thing.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah. It's not like meant to be like, oh, like, shut up about me. But it's like, I know what that's like too. I want to, and have, because there's like a familiarity, and like, to me, that's a basic human thing, is we like to be around people that we feel like we have shared interests with or have shared experiences with, because it's a way to bond. So yeah. I don't know, tell your mom to stop being so hard on you. If you're listening, stop being so hard on Elizabeth. Okay, I'll call. So you can tell her from me. She'll be like, who is this person? that's funny. All right, we're going to start to wrap up here, and want to give you the opportunity to share anything else you'd like to share with the audience at this point. So that can be, you know, we've talked about a lot, so I don't have any specific agenda for you here, but I guess the question is, after I keep rambling on, is there anything else that you would like to share with the audience?
Well, I guess because you're a coach, and perhaps a lot of the people who are listening to you are probably interested in coaching. I'll borrow from what I told myself when I was 19, when I decided to move forward with reading the news or being a news director for several months, couple months. But my motto, or what I encourage or suggest people to do, is to whatever it is that you want to do, do it despite the fear. Mm-hmm. That courage is not the absence of fear, but doing it anyway while still feeling the fear.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Trust me, I'm always scared. I'm always scared to try new things, but I'm just like, but what's worse? What's worse? What's worse is regretting it, you know, thinking, yeah, what if? That's worse. I'm a lot more afraid of that than actually doing it and totally, you know, messing it up and looking like a fool and being judged.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. That's awesome. I had a boss a long time ago. I worked at a telecommunications company. We were selling cell phones in the early 2000s. And he had this funny thing that he would say. He'd go, I know what we do is really important and we all have goals to hit.
Yeah.
But we're not actually making or losing people money in real time, and we're not saving lives. We're not saving people's lives in the moment.
Yeah.
So if you're not doing one of those, well, you could even argue that the money thing, but if you're not, like, okay, so you go and you've got a big pitch for a new client and they go with another provider. Mm-hmm. That stings as an entrepreneur. I get it. I've been there. But the world's not ending, and you get up and you brush yourself off and you do it again the next day.
Exactly.
The other thing I want to share on that is, do you know Mel Robbins? Are you familiar? Or do you like Mel Robbins?
Yes, I love her. I have her book. I follow her. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. She has this really interesting thing about, and for the audience, if you don't know Mel Robbins, she was, I think 2 years ago, was the highest paid female speaker on the circuit. She would do like arena stuff. She was huge. Wow. Wow. She wrote a book called The Five Second Rule, which is, honestly, I've never read the whole thing, but it's like the easiest concept ever and made her very famous. So it also goes to show you that you don't have to make things complex to be really good at what you do. It's like the rule of the whole book, my understanding, is just basically like reiterating this rule and over again. But she has this really interesting thing about public speaking, and she's phenomenal, but she still gets scared, just like everybody still gets scared. Oprah gets scared. Mm-hmm. Is that she says that in your mind, physiologically, your body and your mind hold the chemical of fear and excitement are actually the same.
Yes.
Yeah. And I didn't know this until I heard her say this. So what she says is, she reminds herself, she'll look out at the audience, and I think there's a video of her doing this, and it was like She was at an arena. There was like 15,000 people in the stands. Oh my God.
Lord.
Yeah, exactly. But she reminded her, she's like, oh, I'm really scared. She's like, no, I'm really excited. And just like reframed in her mind that, oh, I'm really excited. Because anybody you know who's a public speaker, who's scared at the beginning, after like, it's like performing music or playing sports, you get out there and 30 seconds later, you're like, oh, I'm in my groove and you're over the fear.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing I just wanted to offer to you and everybody listening is, if you struggle with fear and you get scared of whether it be performing or anything, there's a way to reframe it. Like, I'm really scared to go into this job interview. Oh, I'm really excited to go into this job interview. And there's something in your body and your mind that can just create a different way of being and a different energy that you put out. That people will be attracted to that. People are not attracted to fear almost all the time.
Yeah, I 100% agree with that. Yeah, I guess I didn't realize that I did that, but in a way, that's what I did when I took that opportunity.
Yeah.
When I was 19, I reframed it. Yeah.
Because, very cool.
Yeah. Interesting.
All right. How can the audience find you, connect with you, and connect with Tiny Milkshake Media and all the other stuff you're up to? And I will put all this in the show notes, but I always like to have my guests actually say the things too.
Cool. Okay. So I'm always on Instagram. I practically live there. You can find me at Tiny Milkshake Media on Instagram. And that's my business, my studio Instagram account name. And then my personal is my first name and my last name, Lizbeth Cardozo. But the O is not an O, it's a zero, because apparently there's another Lizbeth Cardozo out there. That
took the name. Yeah.
So
it's very modern. It's very like modern or like musical artist of you.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome. And then I will, you mentioned a couple of the nonprofits for women. I'll put those in the show notes as well. And last thing, always a tradition on the show, and you kind of already did this, so might just have you reiterate what you said, but I'd love us if you would leave us with some patented words of wisdom from you. And the words should fit on a post-it note or on a tiny Instagram post, and not the text part, but the graphics part. Mm-hmm. What do you got for us, Elizabeth?
Okay. Yeah. Going back to what I said before, that courage is not the absence of fear, but doing it despite the fear, doing it anyway, despite the fear.
Courage is not the absence of fear, doing it anyway, do it anyway, despite the fear.
Exactly.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Elizabeth, for being on. It was great to connect with you. Good luck with everything you're up to. And I'm sure we'll be connecting again very soon.
Thank you so much, Jason. This was so much fun. We got to do it again.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Talking to Cool People with Jason Frizzell. If you enjoyed today's episode, please tell your friends, follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and give us a shout out or take a moment to leave a review on iTunes. If something from today's episode piqued your interest and you'd like to connect, email us at podcast@jasonfrizzell.com. We love hearing from our listeners because you're cool. Thanks for listening to another episode of Talking to Cool People with Jason Frizzell. If you enjoyed today's episode, please tell your friends, follow us on Instagram and Facebook, and give us a shout out or take a moment to leave a review on iTunes. If something from today's episode piqued your interest and you'd like to connect, email us at podcast@jasonfrizzell.com. We love hearing from our listeners because you're cool people too.